Okay, so this is case number 4. This is Mr. Nathan O'Clark, 70-year-old gentleman, who presents with a small bowel obstruction. Mr. Clark is 70 inches tall, 100 kilograms, has a past medical history of hypertension, hyperlipidemia, coronary artery disease. He is sent to radiology, where he's going to get an abdominal pelvic CT with contrast. Radiologists want it done with contrast. He has no previous allergy to contrast medium. He comes back from radiology and he does not look well. He's sitting up in bed, retracting, wheezing. He has significant facial edema. His urticaria on his face and arms. The nurses report that his blood pressure is 90 over 50. You can see on the monitor his heart rate is 120. He's tachypneic, breathing at respiratory rate of 28 per minute. He is maintaining his O2 saturation because he's hyperventilating. It's 98%. So, Malcolm, where would you go from here?
Oh, wow. This patient is like teetering right on a precipice, and you can kind of almost foresee that if things start going wrong, and they almost certainly will, they're going to go wrong very, very, very fast. So as an anesthesiologist, I would like to take this patient into my own optimum environment, which would be the operating room, but I don't believe we're going to have much time to do that. I would want to mobilize resources right from the get-go. I want additional expertise. Certainly, I want a surgeon here very fast, because I certainly want to foresee that this patient might require surgical airway, and if it does, you're going to require it very, very fast. It's likely to be very difficult with all of his swelling. And certainly, looking at his airway assessment, it's almost impossible to do a good airway assessment on this patient because of all of his swelling. You can barely open his mouth just by looking at him. He's got what seems to be, a full range of motion of the neck, but that's about the only thing he's got going for him from the airway assessment point of view. Just an extra curveball here is that this patient has a small bowel obstruction, so this potential for not just vomiting, but massive vomiting is actually very, very, very high. This is almost the sort of patient I want to proceed with the surgical airway right from the get-go if I could, but he looks like he's relatively stable right now, but I think the swelling is certainly come on very fast from the history I get. So the longer we wait, the worse it's going to be. So I would certainly like to attempt, with having all of my equipment available, to go proceed with the surgical airway, have my supraglottic airway as well, difficult airway cart if we had one available. I'll try rapid sequence intubation on this patient using the video laryngoscope. But having all of my other options available immediately should something go wrong.
So sadly, with this case, once he has induced face mask ventilation with all optimizations to oral airway, two hands, and assistant, fails with this patient, or will temporize for a short period of time, but due to laryngeal edema, will fail imminently. Endotracheal intubation, both direct laryngoscopy and video laryngoscopy, the view is highly obscured by edematous tissue, and even with a bougie attempt, esophageal intubation is only possible with a bougie. And the supraglottic airway, for the similar reasons of the edema, are very difficult to place in these patients with facial edema. Angioedema would be very similar to this, and it's difficult to place a supraglottic airway in a patient with angioedema or anaphylaxis.
Well, certainly my preferred rescue device in this particular case would be while I'm doing laryngoscopy. I was unable to get a good view with the slip in a supraglottic airway at that point, because I think that would be the best time to actually, with the laryngoscope providing the additional space, through which you can actually insert the supraglottic airway. That would be the best attempt. But as soon as I'm doing that, that is when I want someone to actually proceed with the surgical airway. So we can actually do this concurrently.
Are you able to get a supraglottic airway in this patient?
No, this patient was not. You're not able to do that. But actually, what I would like to go back and talk about is that if you know you're going to, if you know the likelihood of a surgical airway is this high, That one could prep and drape the patient before you induce general anesthesia. And obviously you'd have all of your tools laid out for a surgical airway. You mentioned calling a surgeon earlier. In my institution, we're a level 1A institution, and we do not have surgical teams on call. We have a second year surgical resident on call in-house overnight. ENT is 2 hours away. A senior surgeon or ICU provider is also about half hour to an hour away, which is not enough time for this patient. So we assume that in these cases that the airway providers are going to have to perform the surgical airway, which is why we train for this.
Yes, in our 1A institution, we don't even have a surgical resident in-house. But that brings up the point of the CRICON would definitely be red for this patient. So your equipment should be at the bedside, ready to go, your cricothyroid membrane identified, marked if possible. And sometimes if you have time, and it's difficult to find, you can get a quick ultrasound to locate it. But you definitely want to be ready to proceed. And again, the mantra of prepare for failure.
So some would even suggest that one could do an awake cricothyrotomy on some of these patients. That's been done in the literature as well, as something to consider. Sometimes it's difficult if the patient becomes hypercarbic and then becomes combative. One doesn't want sharp objects around a patient's neck when they're combative. That could lead to further injury to the patient. So induction, gentle induction. The other thing that's very important in this patient who has anaphylaxis is to prepare for the impending cardiovascular collapse in addition to the airway collapse. This patient's blood pressure is quite low and his heart rate's quite high. And with the addition of hypnotic agent, general anesthesia induction, as well as worsening of his anaphylaxis, having epinephrine available for cardiovascular support is highly important as well, and fluids.
Would you use epinephrine, or would you go with another agent?
So from an anesthesia standpoint, we always have phenylephrine available in our intubation kits and ephedrine. Ephedrine's not going to be very effective in this case. Phenylephrine would be our usual go-to medication for causing direct vasoconstriction, which would be helpful in this patient with anaphylaxis. I would likely have opened the code cart with this patient as well, and I would usually take out epinephrine. I would dilute it so that I would have 10 per as opposed to 100 per, so 1/10 ACLS dosing available. Additionally, this patient's wheezing, so he could also have airway reactivity. So even if one is to obtain an airway, it could be difficult to ventilate with airway reactivity as well.
Our pharmacists have put the premixed phenylephrine syringes in our airway drug box in the emergency department. So we're fortunate to have that available. But Jessica, a question I have is, where can you kind of describe on where we are in the vortex with this patient and where it's going? Because this is a difficult case, and I think it's a good illustration of how the vortex cognitive aid can help you sort through all these options and get to where you need to be.
I think this patient is a perfect bullseye in terms of a highly likely surgical airway. You can attempt the face mask ventilation, endotracheal intubation, supraglottic airway, but I think these attempts should be very, very brief in nature and expeditious in nature, and one should not waste that much time because we know from the patient's history that that these will be impossible, difficult, highly difficult to impossible, and not to waste any time. And also their oxygen saturation is going to drop off precipitously as soon as you induce or as soon as they lose their airway fully from edema.
The authors of the Vortex Cognitive Aid do have a disclaimer that while you do want to work through the options, there are clinical situations where they either want to be expedited or you know that you're going to have to skip to the bullseye and proceed on with emergency surgical airway.
Other scenarios would be patients with severe angioedema who are unable to ventilate at all, as well as patients with upper airway abscesses that one does not want to rupture when attempting to obtain an airway, as well as upper airway. So just upper airway abscesses would be another area which would be of concern.
One consideration would be the blind nasal airway that I've been fairly successful with, but I'll certainly be very cautious in this particular patient who's got a full stomach, intestinal obstruction. Once I start pushing that tube back and I induce vomiting, I could very quickly go down the tubes.
So Dr. Klein is showing us his special techniques that have been used in the past.
Yes.
He is a few years my senior. I think I've used a blind nasal intubation maybe 5 times in my career. Most anesthesiologists who are under 40, I think, have done less than that. And it's very rare these days. There's always risk of epistaxis.
Correct.
But it's an excellent technique and can bail you out of many horrible situations. But it's still a technique that unless you're familiar with, I wouldn't go to in this scenario.
And especially in our VA population, we've got patients who are on all kinds of anticoagulants. So not only if you get a nosebleed, it's going to turn out to be a torrential nosebleed, which in this case could be catastrophic.
I agree, Jessica. In emergency medicine, it's a skill that is not practiced as much as it was. And again, that's another caveat that the authors of the Vortex state is that you need to use the tools you're familiar with. And I think an important concept of this model is that while we have this trepidation about cricothyrotomy, it's a straightforward, simple, quick technique. And yes, it's invasive, and there will be some bleeding, but you are better off, the patient is better off, to proceed with a intervention that you can do, you certainly should be able to do this. Anyone who is intubating, intubation privileges should know how to do a cricothyrotomy. It's a better option than trying to do something you don't do very often, such as a nasal tracheal intubation.
The other temptation for many anesthesiologists would be a fiber optic intubation. I think in a patient who's stable, one can consider this. Mm-hmm. For the angioedema patient who maybe is a bit more stable, one can consider this. But in a patient who's has ongoing, rapidly progressing edema, I think that's a time-wasting scenario. Spending time topicalizing in this case and then attempting a fiber optic intubation will likely get you into worse trouble, especially if you start to sedate the patient to tolerate the fiber optic. You're going to end up in a surprised lost airway in the middle of a fiber optic with the patient sitting bolt upright, not prepared for a surgical airway, and that could end up in disaster as well.
And as we mentioned before, the earlier and higher the oxygen saturation, the better your chances of success.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think that concludes our discussion of the last case.